Okay, let's begin and we'll discuss. So a few years ago we began a series in the shul that we called Halachic Men. Basically what we're trying to do is to understand the life and the times of various halachic personalities. And the goal is that this will give us a better understanding of who they were. So in some ways, I have to apologize to you that these shiurim are less Torah in the pure Torah sense, than some of the other shiurim that we give. At the same time that it might be less Torah, hopefully the ideas that we'll develop will help us learn more Torah. In other words, that hopefully we'll develop ideas that will carry over to everything that we learn. And if we understand the halachic personalities better, so we'd have a deeper appreciation of their halachic writings. Now, what we did a few years ago is we studied the Beis Yosef and the Ramah and the Shach, basically. Those are the people we studied. We could have focused on the Taz or the Magen Avraham in terms of the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, but we decided instead not to focus on the Magen Avraham and the Taz, but on the Shach, because as we've mentioned, the Shach was the coolest person ever. That was our basic theory of life. Now, the Shach, as we know, lived from 1621 until 1662. And what we also pointed out is that the Shach lived in a town called Vilna. Now, people don't assume or they don't translate Vilna into the Vilna of the Shach. People think about Vilna as the Vilna of a famous Jew who's 100 years after the Shach. Remember, the Shach is 1621 to 1662, but Elijah Kramer, that is, the Gaon, is 1720 until 1797 in Vilna. So it's 100 years after the Shach. What we spoke about in the context of the Shach is the Shach comes to Vilna right at the time that the University of Vilna is established, right at the time that Vilna becomes a central intellectual hub. It's a place that stuff is happening. That's when the Shach is in Vilna. By the time the Gaon comes around, so Vilna is totally a happening place. Vilna is it. Okay? Now, we'll take a question in 1 minute. Let's just make one more point. This past year, a book came out about the Vilna Gaon. It has the title, The Genius. The Genius, the Vilna Gaon. It's written by Eliyahu Stern. He was in YU with me, a lively character. Those who were around YU when Eli Stern was there kind of know. A very lively character. What Eliyahu Stern argues in this book is that the Vilna Gaon is part of, it's Elijah of Vilna and the making of modern Judaism. He contends that the Vilna Gaon is not just an important figure in the history of Torah, but the Gaon is an important figure in the history of modern Judaism. Because at the time of the Gra, Vilna is a metropolis that is a majority Jewish. That is his argument. Now, I read a good chunk of this book. I have not yet seen evidence that Vilna was a majority Jewish. Vilna was certainly very Jewish. There are lots of Yid in there, but a majority Jewish, I think, is overstepping. And his assumption that the Gaon, he contrasts the Gra and Mendelssohn throughout this book. He says Mendelssohn is a leader of Jews in a culture that is a minority Jewish. And as such, Mendelssohn has to kind of defend his culture in the face of German culture. And that's why his apologetics or the like are written. The Gra is unabashedly Jewish because, who has to deal with those Goyim? They're only a minority anyway. That's basically Stern's argument. We'll talk about the Gra Pali for 2 or 3 weeks. We'll have time to weigh this argument. I'm not so crazy about it. But it's certainly something that's worth focusing on in terms of Vilna at this point is not just an intellectual hub. Smart people were coming to Vilna. Smart people were going and they were studying with the Vilna Gaon, right? There's lots of smart stuff going around. There's also lots of Yidden in Vilna. That is certainly true. Whether it's a majority or not, Stern is certainly correct that Vilna is a major Jewish center at this point. Right? We do know that the Gra's grandfather, who wrote the Be'er Hagola, also was a Rav in Vilna. The Gra, however, himself occupied no official position. The Gra was just there. He studied, he learned, people knew about him. Right? We know from the Alter Rebbe's letter that the Gra, even though he didn't publish during his lifetime, published almost nothing, but people knew about him, he was famous, but he did not do that much in lifetime. Stern's argument that even though the Gra didn't do much, he established a lot about what modern Judaism is something that we will have to focus on as we learn some more. Yeah, now we can take a question.
Wasn't the Rabbi of Vilna at the time of Hayada?
No. The Rabbi of Vilna at this time was Rabbi Shmuel ben Avigdor, who was excommunicated. There was a whole big fight about him.
The
Chai Adam wasn't Vilna. The Chai Adam was related to the Gra. The Chai Adam was a Mechutna of the Gra. We can talk about the Chai Adam, but I don't say anything about the Chai Adam. I defer to my gentleman colleague in the back, who has some great expertise in the Chai Adam. But no, the Chai Adam was not a rabbi in Vilna. The Chai Adam was a businessman. Okay, very important. Let's emphasize that again and again. Okay, you could be a major league Talmud Chacham who does not occupy a rabbinic position. The Chai Adam, Rabbi Abraham Danzig, was not a rabbi. Well, not a professional rabbi. The Chai Adam was a businessman. That is really, really important. Like, we should emphasize that point again and again. Like, we should tell our students all the time. You know, sometimes, by the way, I would probably learn a lot more if I wouldn't be a rabbi. Just, right, word to the wise. Okay, now. Yeah, there's so much to do. Yeah.
Do you also think the argument that the person who started modern Judaism was Rabbi Hirsch?
No, I mean, you can make lots of arguments. The question is, what do you mean by modern? What do you mean by Judaism? When? You can make lots of arguments. I don't know. This is all, this doesn't matter. It's all about defining terms. And let's talk right now, tonight. What I want to have a conversation with you about tonight is we are in Mount Sinai Jewish Center. Mount Sinai Jewish Center, according to our website, is a proud modern Orthodox congregation. Right? So, obviously, as modern Orthodox Jews, we want all rabbinic forebears to similarly be modern Orthodox, correct? So Avram Avinu Kayadua went to YU, right? That's obvious. Or whatever the institution was known as, like, before the first major fiscal crisis. But Avram Avinu, right, obviously went to YU. And the Vilna Gaon, right, some would contend is modern Orthodox. Now, other people would say, Schwartz, you must have been smoking something, because this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The reality is, come on, the Gaon, he's not modern Orthodox. The Gaon's a Yid who was shaken al Dalsus HaTorah, and you read about the Gra, and he lived and he breathed. Everything was Torah, Torah, Torah. That's not Torah Umada, it's Torah V'Torah, right? Nothing else. And that certainly is something that we'll have to contend with, although we will try to maintain that Vilna Gaon, in fact, did go to YU, and Vilna Gaon, in fact, did attend Mount Sinai. He, in fact, was modern Orthodox. We'll try to make this case, but certainly it's a case that has to be made. On the other end of the Vilna Gaon in Gra historiography, you get the sense that the Gra was not just a YU guy. The Gra was Gar Erger, who's much worse than even the YU guy, if you could imagine that, right? The Gra was a Maskil, right? And this is something that is found among historians. They contend that the Vilna Gaon, right, Levinson was a famous Haskalah historian, and this is probably the best book about the Gra, Eli Stern's Kvodum Koma Munach, but Immanuel Etkes is the historian of this period. Gra's book, Yachid B'doro HaGaon MiVilna, Demut V'Dimui, Image and, I don't know, how do you say Demut V'Dimui? Image and likeness, so we got it. So in Etkes' book, he quotes from Levinson and from Haskalah historians who say nothing less than the Gra was a prototype of Haskalah. Now, there are different types of prototypes, and Etkes deals with this in his book. In Hebrew, we could talk about Mevaseah versus Echalotz. Echalotz is the first of a movement, but is part of the movement. The Chalutzim are going to Israel, they are settling the land, they are part of a large movement. They are Chalutzim, right? A Mevaser is before the movement begins, right? But someone who's kind of given off faint rays, talking about an idea that's going to come later on. A forerunner. A what?
A scout versus a pioneer.
A scout versus a pioneer, exactly. The argument is not, okay, don't sell, I mean, maybe we should sell Haskalah historians short, but they weren't totally saying that the Gra is a chalutz. They were saying he's a mevaser. They're saying that the ideas of Haskalah. Now remember, what is the Haskalah? The Haskalah is a movement that wants Jews to become fully accepted into society. In order to become fully accepted into society, we should get rid of certain outside accoutrements of our Judaism that prevent us. Right? We should study the same things that other people study. We should be full members of the society. Part of being a maskil is that we should change our educational curriculum. And instead of studying those things that make us different from the rest of the world, no, we should try to be as similar to the rest of the world as we can be. Right? So change your traditional yeshiva curriculum. Include language. Include literature. Include all of the things that are being studied elsewhere in order that you should be full members of the society where you live. No? Mendelssohn is the Haskalah model. Mendelssohn's circle in Berlin is Haskalah. That's what they're called. That's who they are. But that is Western Europe. In Eastern Europe, is there any type of Haskalah or proto-Haskalah? The argument goes that the figure of Elijah Kramer of Vilna, namely the Gaon, he is the proto-maskil. That is the argument. So now, this, we have these three positions about the Gra. Okay, we have the Gra as a modern Orthodox Gadol. We have the Gra as a typical Haredi Gadol. By the way, the Gra as a modern Orthodox Gadol, I would say, is what emerges from a lot of the literature from the modern Orthodox world. The Torah Umada journal, the BDD, B'chod Rechacha Da'ehu journal, that comes out of Bar Ilan, had a series of articles by Shukat and by Aaron Schreiber, Zechron Lavracha, and by many others who contend that the Gra is modern Orthodox. The Gra is a Haskalah, as a maskil or proto-maskil. Etkes quotes this from Yeshua Ber, Levinson, and from other historians. But there's also a school that the Gra is a Haredi. Right? The school that the Gra is a Haredi is most commonly found today among, obviously, the Haredi historians. Who are the Haredi historians of the Gra? So the first Haredi history of the Gra is written by Bezalel Landau. Bezalel Landau published this book in E-Israel, of course, and he published this book, I don't remember what year, it doesn't say, 1964. It's called Hagoyin HaChosid MeVilna. A goyin hachassid mivilna. Now, that term, goyin hachassid, is the way the Gro was described by his contemporaries. And that's a very important term. If I talk about Elijah Kramer of Vilna as a goyin, that means I am praising him as an intellectual super genius. Clearly, he was. But if I talk about him as a goyin hachassid, I'm saying not only is he a super genius, but he also represents a type of moral perfection that we are striving for. And if you read some of the books about the Gra, there is, well, just one second, Ben, there is a book about the Gra that came out in 1856 called Aliyos Eliyahu, written by Rabbi Yeshua Levin. Now, Aliyos Eliyahu is the most Hasidish book ever written, even though it's about the Gra. It has all these stories. When the goyin is two, he's making a bracha before nursing. Yes. It's there. Right? They have stories about how the Gra at age five in Cheder is answering a kasha that's stumping all of the Rebbeim. The goyin is super duper Rupert genius. He is up there, but not only is he a genius, the goyin is moral perfection. And the goyin is a Jew who would eat like one olive total. The goyin would sleep a total of 2 hours and 24, divided up in half an hour slots, three of those half an hour slots at night, one of them during the day. We know the goyin was physically huge. She was a massive, imposing personality. Big, right? The goyin is stuff that legends are made out of. Obviously, he's it. But the term goyin hachosid mivilna means that not only are we praising the goyin for being super duper super genius man, but he is a chosid, which means, in part, this is more perfection, but also, coming a little bit after the Gra, there's another group out there, or at the end of the Gra's life, there's a group called Hasidim. And the Gra, well, he didn't like those Hasidim too much.
No way.
And real Hasidus is not where it... Real Hasidus isn't doing what those people who call themselves Hasidim, the so-called Hasidim, are doing. No, no, no. Real Hasidus. And you have to remember, one of the attacks on Hasidim is that they were gluttons. They would eat too much. And they would get too involved in Hanos Olam Hazeh. And now I have an individual called the Goyin HaChosid Mivilna. And as Goyin and Chosid, he is denying pleasures of the world. He is the Goyin Chosid. And we're saying, you know what? Real Chasidus is that guy. It's not them guys. Right? That is part of the lesson. And this is all introduction. Now we're about ready to learn. Ben. Correct. So I mean, it happened towards the end of his life. But the fact that they're using, he was known as Hachassid at his time. So again, who's appropriating whose term? Yeah. Again, I hope to give a class about the Gra and Hasidus. Maybe in 2 weeks from now, or next week, depending on my mood, we'll talk about that. But tonight we're talking about the Gra as a modern Orthodox Jew. That's our goal. Okay? So now, ladies and gentlemen, what does it mean to be modern Orthodox? No idea. Right? Anyone want to take a stab at what it means? What? So I have for you on this sheet part of an article that's written by Dr. Chaim Waxman. People know Chaim Waxman?
Yeah.
Chaim Waxman's a son-in-law of Reb David Lifshitz. Right? Reb David Lifshitz. So Chaim Waxman was a sociologist in Rutgers. He made Aliyah a few years ago. Right? Great guy. And he wrote an article in the Eidah Journal back in 2004. And this, of course, is a theme of Chaim Waxman has been saying all the time. I heard it from him in the mid-90s already, and he published it before that in various articles in modern Judaism. He has an article about two types of modern Orthodoxy, that there is what he calls the high culture modern Orthodox and the low culture modern Orthodox. Certain people use the term modern Orthodox as an excuse to have less Shemiras HaMitzvos, no? I still remember one time Rav Shefter told the story about how he's at the van stop. You see a van stop on Amsterdam, like 185th, like on near the library. And he sees like a couple who's engaged in various and sundry activities. He walks up there and says, you know, it says in the Torah that you really shouldn't do that. They said, yeah, but we believe in Torah Umada. That was their response. Now, that means that you're using certain things as an excuse. Sometimes people do use modern orthodoxy as an excuse to be less than holy, less than completely orthodox. That does sometimes happen. But what Chaim Waxman argued in that piece is that genuine modern orthodoxy is an ideal that represents certain things. It represents complete fealty to halacha in addition to connection to the world. I think you wrote me a question about this at one point. In addition to connection to the world and involvement in the world and appreciation of the best things that Western society has to offer, that's all part of modern orthodoxy. Now, how do we define modern orthodoxy? So in this piece, Chaim Waxman is responding to someone wrote an essay that there are 11 points of modern orthodoxy. Whenever he gets in number 11, that's too confusing. Chaim Waxman thinks, there might be some question as to how precisely to define the distinction between modern orthodoxy and, I quote, ultra-right-wing sectarian or Haredi orthodoxy. But there seems to be some basic agreement that they may be distinguished on the basis of three major characteristics. First involves the Haredi stance towards the larger Jewish community. Now, the larger Jewish community, I mean, Reform, Conservative, etc. No? Jews who are less observant. The Haredi world tends to say, Austrit, Rabbiner Hirsch, we will stay away, we will erect walls, right? The modern Orthodox world tends to say, no, we believe that in some engagement. Now, of course, this cannot be shayich at the time of the Gra. Engagement with the larger Jewish community is not really possible because the Gra, living as he did in Eastern Europe, you basically had two choices. Tradition, right? There's no such thing as Orthodox Judaism. There's traditional Judaism. I am a frum Jew because my father was frum. I might not know anything. I might not believe anything. But daddy went to shul, I go to shul. Right? Mommy salted meat like this, I salt meat like this. It's all mimetic tradition. Right? I do stuff because everyone did the same thing. That's what it is. Orthodoxy, as a term, can only come up when you have alternatives within the system. I could be Reform. Oh, now I'm Orthodox. Right? In Eastern Europe at this point, you can't have a conversation about the larger Jewish community because the community is Jewish or Shmad. Jewish or apostasy. That's your option. So that first definition, I don't think we can analyze with the Gra. The second, in reference to modernity, general scholarship and science. Okay, modernity, general scholarship and science. Generally speaking, the Haredi world is less interested in studying other things. Modern Orthodox world is deeply interested in knowing the world that we live in. Because there's a fundamental belief that it's all from God and we're trying to uncover God's wisdom. The Haredi world, in theory, might believe that, but they would say that our responsibility to understand Torah is so broad, so overarching, so all-encompassing, I got no time to read Richard Dawkins. I have no time to study anything besides Rashi, Tosfos, and Shulchan Aruch. So, don't even talk to me about it. Right? So that's the second definition of modern orthodoxy, and we'll have to talk about the Gra's attitude with this. And the third is a perspective toward Israel and Zionism. Now, obviously, I can't talk, when I'm talking about the Gra, I can't talk about the modern state of Israel. That didn't happen until 1948. Herzl isn't even, right? You can't, right? He don't exist, right, when the Gra's around. But I can talk about some of the basic ideas of religious Zionism, right? Some of the ideas about to what extent we feel that we should be partners in establishing a Jewish state, and to what extent do I say I'll be passive and let God do it himself. That's a major question when it comes to Zionism. Right? Obviously, Shalosh Shvuas Mashpiyan also the Gemara at the end of Ksubis. Shalo Yahu Bachoma means don't do it yourself. Right? Hashem will bring Mashiach. Beis HaMikdash will come down in fire from Shemayim, beautiful, amazing, and we should, right, sit still and let God do it. But the belief of religious Zionism has always been that no, mir daftin. Now we have to do it ourselves. We should go and build the state, etc. That same question you can look at from the perspective of the Gra, especially if we take the messianic approach to building the state. If I believe that building the state of Israel or settling the land or whatever is a part of the messianic process, okay, so now I got a question. Should I do it or should I say Mashiach is going to happen? HaKadosh Baruch Hu would bring it by himself and I'm not involved. Major question. That question we can look at from the perspective of the Gra as well. So now, we will contend that the Vilna Gaon was in fact modern Orthodox, at least by two of these three definitions. One, modernity, general scholarship, and science. Two, is on Zionism. Ready to learn? Let's go. Yeah, Avi. I think was about the myth of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, not necessarily in a messianic sort of way, but there is a mitzvah as a mitzvah. Okay, if I say that it's a mitzvah, like putting on tefillin is a mitzvah, so all bets are off, right? The only reason I can have this conversation about the grand modern Zionism is if I'm assuming that Yishuv Haaretz is not a mitzvah the same as laying tefillin, but it's a mitzvah that involves somehow hastening Mashiach's arrival. Which, by the way, is a standard belief in the religious Zionist world in Israel. In America, Rav Soloveitchik believed in the state of Israel, but not as a messianic ideal. If you read the Rav's writings about religious Zionism, Kodo Dido Fake never mentions Mashiach. No? But if you are a Merkaznik and you drank the Kool-Aid of Reb Tzvi Yehuda, so you are totally a believer that every swamp that we dry is the Ketz HaMagula. No? Oh, yeah. They would say that they are. They would self-identify as being very different than the Haredi society around them. Well, they are clearly Orthodox. They clearly believe in all these tenets, right? They clearly do believe in modernity, general scholarship, and science, and building a state. And building a state as a... So, by Chaim Waxman's definition, they're it. Yes. Right. But, again... If YU is the flagship institution of modern Orthodoxy, so we have to go back to history and realize in 1929, YU wanted to merge with Merkaz. No? When Rav Kook came and gave a shiur in YU, the goal was to try to merge YU. Again, Merkaz was just a vision that he had, but Rav Kook believed that the central yeshiva in Yerushalayim and this yeshiva in New York are really connected. No? Happens that those same years while he was also talking about merging with JTS. Which is... Right? Okay, now...
JTS was different then.
Yeah. It was different, but the reason they didn't merge was because of Kaplan, right? Kaplan was... Fine. So now, what's the Gra's approach to science? So, we know very little from the Gra himself. We do know some things from students of the Gra. A few words to be said about students of the Gra. Who were the students of the Gra? What did it mean to be a student of Gra? I know what it means to be someone who's my student. You're my student if you take my class and you register for my shiur. You're my student if you come to my shiur. You're my, right? That's what it means to be a student. Now, for the Gra never said Shi'urim. By the way, the personality who's most similar to the Gra, FYI, is the Chazon Ish. We're going to be talking about him. Oh. Like, everything I'm saying about the Gra, really, like, jump, I don't know, 150 years, and Avim Yishai Karelitz is the same thing. Right? Fine. And I hope if we'll learn about the Chazon Ish this summer, we'll have some of this science conversation with respect to the Chazon Ish as well. Right? What? So what's the Chazon Ish modern effect? So that far I can't go. Not shayach. Right? Absolutely not shayach. But we'll have to talk about it and etc. Now, says the Gra, all the sciences are needed for our holy Torah and all are included therein. That's what Rabbi Yisrael Shklov mentions in the Hakdama to Pasa Shulchan. Now, we talk about Yisrael Shklov, he's one of the students of the Gra. To be a student of the Gra, I don't know what that means exactly. The sons of the Gra, the Hakdama to the Bir HaGra on Eirechayim, give us a list of 7 students of the Gra. 7. That's it. But Tzal Landau, in his book over here, Hagayin HaChosim Mevilna, gives us a list of some 60 students of the Gra. Now, everyone knows that Reb Chaim Volozhin is a student of the Gra. And that's about it. And everyone knows, like, Mr. Reb Sadia Bar Nosson, who we know very little about, also he made Aliyah, the student of the Gra. Reb Yisrael Shklov is a student of the Gra. He's not mentioned by the Gra's sons, by the way, in their list in the Bir HaGra. The Reb Yisrael Shklov, by the way, keep the name Shklov in your mind. Reb Yisrael Shklov as a student of, oh gosh, it's really getting light. Reb Yisrael Shklov as a student of the Gra also made Aliyah. And he tried to establish a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. The early yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael are students of the Gra. They are the Prushim. Minhag HaGra is very common in Eretz Yisrael for that reason, no? Rabbi Yisrael Shklov wrote a sefer on the halachos of Eretz Yisrael called Pa'as HaShulchan. In the introduction to that sefer, he quotes from the Gra that all sciences are needed for the Holy Torah. Now, that does not mean very much. All that means is, if I want to understand Torah properly, I have to know science. Okay. That's probably something that we won't deny. But there's a statement of Reb Baruch of Shklov that goes much further. Okay, Reb Baruch of Shklov is a complicated figure. Rabbi Baruch of Shklov, you see, in 1777, went to Berlin and he studied by none other than Moses Mendelssohn. 1778, he comes back to Vilna and he goes to the Gra. And he writes, when I visited Vilna in Tavis of 1778, I heard from the holy lips of the Gaon that to the extent that one is... By the way, and he only calls him the Gaon of Vilna, not Gaon and Chassid, but he heard from the holy lips of the Gaon of Vilna that to the extent that one is deficient in secular wisdom, he'll be deficient 100-fold in Torah study, for Torah and wisdom are bound up together. He compared a person lacking in secular wisdom to a man suffering from constipation. I don't know exactly where this one is going, but that's what he said, right? His disposition is affected to the point that he refuses all food. And he quotes from the Gra that he urged me to translate into Hebrew as much secular wisdom as possible so that the nations will disgorge what they have swallowed, etc., and they will no longer be able to lord over us and to taunt, where is your wisdom? The Gra is quoting, the Reb Baruch HaShklov is quoting from the Gra that to the extent that you're deficient in secular wisdom, you'll be deficient in Torah. That means that secular wisdom is part of Torah, but it goes much more. You see, Reb Baruch HaShklov was trying to translate classical works into Hebrew in order to get the Eastern European Jews to become more modern. The work that this is written on is his introduction to Sefer Euclidos. That is the book of Euclid, Euclidean geometry. Now, Reb Baruch of Shklov is saying that the Gra encouraged him to do this. No? But a few things. If I'll take up Betzalel Landau's book about the Gra, Charedi History of the Gra. By the way, there's another Charedi History of the Gra written by Reb Dov Eliach. It's 3 volumes. It's called Sefer HaGra or something. Very exciting and catchy title. But in Betzalel Landau's book about the Gra, it's on page Resh Yud Zayin, and the footnotes on page Resh Chaf Dalet, he says that, you know what, Baruch of Shklov, he ain't no student of the Gra. He's not mentioned anywhere as a student of the Gra. Basically, who he was is someone who studied by Mendelssohn, And he got this idea in his head that I want to modernize Eastern European Jewry. So I want to translate works into Hebrew. And in order to affect this, he decided, you know what, let me try to get a Haskamah from the Gra. So he goes and he visits the Gra, and he says, you know what, let me get an approbation on my book. You know what the Gra told him? He said, probably, Gay Fife and Ashvartzen Yam. Go, get lost. I'm not giving you a Haskamah. But the Gra is probably a little bit too nice, you just don't get lost. So he said, you know, you should be blessed today, but the secular wisdom is also important, now get lost. Right? That's basically, he didn't give him the Haskamah that he wanted. Now, what do we know about Reb Baruch HaShklov? Very, very little. But we do know that Reb Baruch HaShklov might have been the proto-Maskil that we were speaking about beforehand. If you want to know a figure who's trying to modernize Eastern European Jewry, it's Reb Baruch HaShklov. That's who's doing it. To say that the Vilna Gaon had this agenda, that's probably not true. Now, the Gra did know science. You can't deny that. The Gra, again, according to tradition, he wrote a book called the Ayo Meshulash. The Ayo Meshulash are the Gra's notes on science. Right? It's basically a math book. And the Gra wrote it. Now, in yeshiva, I remember in high school, they told us about the Ayo Meshulash, and they say, when did the Gra write his book? They said when he was in the bathroom, no? Is that what they tell you?
Yeah.
Of course, I was talking to my son today about this. He said, so how long did the Gra spend in the bathroom exactly? That's the way if you're a 13-year-old boy. What? Constipation, right? But the fact is, it's very hard to really prove. And Etkes, who's the real historian over here, Etkes says, yes, the Gra certainly knew science. But the Gra, when he wrote Ayo Meshulash, never did he write for publication. It's by his own math notes that he jotted down because mathematical concepts are important for him to help understand sugyas and shas. Right? So it's hard to know, unless we fully accept the statement of Reb Baruch HaShklov, it's hard to know that the Gra had an agenda to try and teach science to the Jews. There are other statements from well after this time period. Reb Avram Simcha of Amchislav, and now I'm quoting from Schneier Lyman's article in this green book, in Judaism's Encounters with Other Cultures. Reb Avram Simcha of Amchislav said that I heard from my uncle Reb Chaim of Alojan that the Gaon of Vilna told his son Reb Avram that he craved for translations of secular wisdom into Hebrew, including a translation of the Greek or Latin Josephus. Right? Now, what does that mean? That means that the Gra, if this is true, and there's no reason to assume it's not true, the Gra wanted information. The Gra is a super-duper genius. He wants to know everything that there is. Does that imply an agenda of trying to modernize Judaism? I don't think so. But by virtue of the fact that he wanted to know these matters, you get the impression, I would say, that he's closer to a modern Orthodox Gadol rather than a Haredi Gadol. Right? I can't imagine anyone saying about Haredi Gadol that they wanted to know this stuff. The stories about the Chazon Ish are more like osmosis. He happened to develop. Not that he consciously wanted to learn science, etc. Right? Yeah, David?
I mean, what
are
the stories along those lines of
Shlomo Zalman Auerbach? I remember one of my most eye-opening moments right when I first came to YU is Rav Shachter was giving a shiur on a Friday night, and he's talking about like modern Orthodox Gedolim. He says, so Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is modern Orthodox. Like, the guy's like, what are you talking about? So, I mean, Rav Shachter's approach is very similar to this Chaim Waxman definition. That if modern Orthodoxy means that I want to understand the world, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was not trained in science, but he was a smart man, and he had scientists to explain things to him in order to properly understand and to issue correct halachic decisions. Is that the same as the Gra, or the Gra is a step more? The Gra is saying that studying it itself is a value, but that's the question, that's the tension. He wanted to study science, that clearly, that is clear. Now, yeah, Ben? Okay, so the Rambam I haven't mentioned because he's much earlier than this time period. I think I can try to comprehend 18th century Jews, but yes, definitely, absolutely. But what was the Rambam, right? You know, how many modern Orthodox schools are named Maimonides? Right? Where did you go to high school? Okay, right? So, but that's the point, right? In other words, I think the idea of having modern Orthodox, because I remember as a kid, like my first year in college, so they put out a Purim issue of the Hamavaser, and it said, get your modern Orthodox Gedolim card, collect both of them.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Now,
that.
Now cool. The idea is, I think, that if we go through the span of history, there are many more modern Orthodox Gedolim than just Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Right? There have to be. And that's really what we're trying to do now. The Gra, in some ways, is a prototype of this Rav Soloveitchik ideal. Right? That's what we're trying to get at. He's not a Haredi, he's not a Maskil. He's modern Orthodox. Yeah. Dashiell?
The film didn't publish it, but it was published. The Berak Gra and the Shulchan Aruch, where he criticized very heavily the
Okay. So the Gra has some criticism of the Rambam. Absolutely. I give this to you on the next page. Okay, so let's just talk about a few things. I give you the Wikipedia article from about the Gra. It makes the Gra sound modern Orthodox. In the Wikipedia article, that's my Raya. So obviously I'm right. Now, the Gra, the Maskilim assume that the Gra was one of them because the Gra is opposed to Pilpul. And they write in the introduction to the Bir HaGran Arachayim that the Gra said he gave staunch warnings, you know what, don't get involved in Pilpul. Now, a few things have to be said about Pilpul. It'll take a very long time. Pilpul is this type of learning that you assume that everyone is making the same assumptions everyone else is making. Right? The Gra was very opposed to Pilpul. The Gra felt that learning has to be halacha l'maisa learning. That's clear. The Gra is a halachist. Now, there are many people who have found fault in the traditional corpus of study that was done. We can't say in yeshivos, but we could say the way people studied, because yeshivos didn't exist until the Talmidim of the Gra. Abraham Volozhiner built the first yeshiva in Volozhin in 1803. No? Volozhin opened the same year as the Louisiana Purchase. The Gra, by the way, is a contemporary of George Washington. Right?
That's interesting.
Just like to put things in perspective.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Right? Now, many people had problems with the way Jews were studying Torah, the Gra included, and he said, don't study Pilpul, learn Halacha. But that doesn't mean that I, like, let's say the Maskilim of Western Europe, am going to establish a new educational system completely different, that, right, a cheder mitukan, as opposed to the regular cheder, or the like. We're not going to go that far. The Gra, the Maharal of Prague, might have been the radical reformer of the educational system. It was not the Gra. The Gra just was kvetching about Pilpul. He said, don't do too much Pilpul. So I think the argument from this line in the introduction of the Gra's sons to the Bir HaGra on Arachayim, I don't think that line proves very much. Yeah.
You mentioned one aspect which is often mentioned, and that is text emendation.
Okay, so text emendation. I might have to talk about that more fully. Professor Louis Ginsberg, in a lecture in 1920, for the 200th birthday of Elijah Kramer, said as follows, the Gra is the father of not just lower Talmudic criticism, but higher criticism as well. Now, the heck is the difference between lower criticism and higher criticism? Those people studying Talmud in universities understand the difference. To me, it doesn't matter. I don't think the Gra, and maybe we'll have to talk about this, the Gra certainly changed millions and millions of texts. In Talmud Bavli, in Talmud Yerushalmi, in Midrashei Halacha, the Gra has a pen, and he sits there writing, and right, crosses it out, and he changes. That's what he does. Now, is that criticism? Well, on a certain level, yes, but it's very different than academic criticism. Did the Gra make changes based on manuscripts? Now, we have traditions that the Gra went into exile twice, no? He, in 1740, right after he got married, he spent like a couple of years away from his wife, and he traveled Europe. I guess that was his honeymoon, but by himself, right? And then later on, we have a tradition in the 1780-something that the Gra tried to make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, no? And he got as far as The Hague. Why he went to The Hague, well, we'll have to maybe talk about that in a few moments. The Amsterdam, The Hague, the Gra made it there, right? Now, the Haredi historians say that the Gra was traveling in all these times to collect manuscripts to make his emendations on texts. Few problems. We have no evidence of this. Maybe we'll talk about this more fully. In Stern's book, he has a footnote. It's footnote 93 on page 53 that summarizes the literature on this question, right? It's footnote 93 that corresponds to page 53 in the book. The Shaul Lieberman, I think, conclusively showed that the Gra's type of emendations are emendations based on Svara, or emendations based on trying to assume that the Talmud Bavli is primary. And if I have a Yerushalmi, for example, very often in the Bavli of Machlekes Rabbi Yochanan Mishlakish one way, and in the Yerushalmi of the same Machlekes by Keret. No? You ever notice this? Isa Omed Lecholik. It's Machlekes Rabbi Yochanan Mishlakish, right? Bavli Yerushalmi, but punkt by Keret. And that sometimes is used as a rationale for how come the Rambam always paskins wrong. No? Because the Gemara Yevamah says Rishon Pasuk Rabbi Yochanan, not like Rish Lakish, no? So, how come Rambam says Pasuk Rish Lakish? I'll tell you why. Because he had a Yerushalmi that had a Fakert. The Gra, in every instance of Yerushalmi having Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish Fakert, the Gra flips it back the way the Bavli has. And this led Professor Fox and others to say that the Gra's emendations are simply because he's trying to level the playing field, make everything the same as Talmud Bavli. Bavli is... Now, that is totally non-academic. That is so not higher criticism. It doesn't smell like higher criticism at all. Right? Higher criticism would be saying, well, who is the author and what is the stam and which line? Hey, that's nothing like higher criticism. So again, Professor Ginsburg's argument that Gra is the father of higher criticism, again, is coming from Professor Ginsburg. Ad kan devaray. Now, the same Gra, the Moscow argument that the Gra is a proto-Moscow, really has to deal with the Gra's approach to philosophy. No? You see, if I am a Moscow, I believe that philosophy is like the best thing since sliced bread. The Gra didn't like philosophy in the slightest. I don't think I'm going to have a chance to get to Zionism, actually. This is taking much too long. But the Gra's approach is that philosophy reeks. In the introduction to the Pa'as HaShulchan, so Rabbi Yisrael Shklov quotes from the Gra that he studied all of philosophy and found two redeeming ideas. But he doesn't tell me what those two ideas are. Now, that is an amazing, amazing thing. No? There are two good things in philosophy. And the Gra, over here, in the context of Lach Hashem, in the context of reciting certain incantations and get a makkah, the Gra quotes that the Rambam doesn't like any of these Lach Hashem. And the Gra has some fighting words against the Rambam. He writes, "Hu nimshach acha ha-philosophia ha-arura," that the Rambam was drawn after the accursed philosophy. No? Now, in some of the manuscripts of the Bir HaGra, the word arura is taken out because it's censored. But the fact is, the Vilna Gaon is really not a fan of philosophy. And the Vilna Gaon really is a fan of Kabbalah. No? The Gra, remember, did not only amend texts of Gemara, Bavli, Yerushalmi, Midrashei Halacha, etc. The Gra also is writing, and the Gra wrote more on Kabbalah than he wrote on Halacha. No? Now, if I am a maskil, I have to ignore this approach to Kabbalah. Kabbalah is like the least rational thing on the planet. What is less rational than talking about God's body? Right? What is less rational than talking about various you can't even talk in these terms. So the fact is, Haskalah history, I think, is discredited. Haredi history, that the Gra basically only learned, and the quote of Reb Baruch HaShklov, they take what they assume is a suffix. That's what Landau has, and that's what it says in the Haredi histories of the Gra. There might be something to it, but the fact is, Reb Baruch HaShklov published his work Euclid 17 years before the Gra died. The Gra's alive when this quote is out there. It was never denied during his lifetime. Now, one could contend that Reb Baruch HaShklov is already operating in a different universe than the Gra, and the Gra wouldn't have known about the book. But then again, Shklov, where Reb Baruch of Shklov is from, is 30 kilometers from Vilna. That's not so far. Now, Shklov might have been 30 kilometers from Vilna in geography, but in identity, Shklov is a different world. David Fishman has a series of articles where he contends that Shklov is Haskalah central in Eastern Europe. Right? And amazingly, all of the people who are quoting that the Gra is into science lived in Shklov. Reb Yisrael of Shklov, Rabbi Baruch of Shklov, and they have a third dude, Rabbi Hillel of Shklov. Right? So this leads one to think, and the way I once wrote this, is that the statements about the Gra and science and the Gra and secular knowledge are not to be taken through the lens of Rabbi Baruch HaShklov, but through the prism of the town of Shklov. A lens gives you clear vision. A prism distorts. Right? Shklov is a different intellectual universe. Right? Vilna might have been an intellectual hub, but it's not Haskalah. They're not, or proto-Haskalah. They're not, like, trying to modernize the Jewish people. Shklov, with its 1,500 Jews over there, has got three of them who are making statements, blaming the Gra on them about modernization. So the Haredi approach to the Gra is not crazy. However, it's still hard to deny these statements completely. And therefore, if you don't deny them completely, you do end up with something along the lines that the Gra is a modern Orthodox Jew. Orly, you had a comment? That Deres Aliyah, the what? The Aliyos Aliyah. Aliyos Aliyah was written 50 years after his death. Yeah.
So couldn't that also be
absolutely
a mythology?
Yes. There's a ton of mythology about the Gra. We don't really know. In terms of what was written by the Gra, the things that I think we should take most seriously are the things that were written by those who we know are genuine students of the Gra. That is the seven. Reb Chaim Volozhiner and a few others. Now, there is another fellow, Reb Menachem Mendel of Shklov. Remember, Shklov is close to Vilna, so a lot of people from Shklov are coming to Vilna. Reb Menachem Mendel of Shklov is known as the official student of the Gra, no? Reb Mendel of Shklov wrote the first book that was published posthumously, which is the Perish HaGra on Mishlei. Now, if there's any sefer in Tanakh that focuses heavily on what Chochmah is, it is the book of Mishlei. The word Chochmah appears in Mishlei some 180 times, right? That is around 30 times more than it appears throughout the rest of Tanakh. It's a lot. It's a lot. In Mishlei, in the Pirish HaGra in Mishlei, so the word Chochmah appears 180 times. How many of those times does the word Chochmah mean science, secular wisdom? Go through the parish of Reb Menachem Mendel Shklov, who's an official student, and you will see zilch, not one. I can find for you references in the Bir HaGra on Mishlei, in Perek Chesed and Perek Tesvav, where the word Chochmah in Mishlei means Kabbalah. But it doesn't ever mean secular wisdom. That means, I think, that the Gra felt that real Chachma is Chachmas HaTorah. Secular wisdom might help enhance Chachmas HaTorah, but the real Chachma is Torah. There's so much more to say. This is taking much longer than I thought. I really thought tonight would be even a short shiur. But I thank you for listening. Maybe next week I'll make one or two points about the Grand Zionism, and maybe we'll talk about the Grand Hasidus next week, if people want that. And, okay, again, this is less Torah than usual, but I like this stuff anyway.